We will call the August 22nd City Council meeting to order, and we will start with the pledge. Rusty, you want to lead us?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, roll call.
Coke?
Recording in progress.
Coke? Is he still on?
He's just connecting now, though, so.
Okay. We'll come back.
Okay. Transier?
Here.
Plocher?
Here.
Soling?
Here.
Funkhauser?
Here.
Merrick?
Here.
Terulis?
Here.
Cornels?
Present.
Coke? We'll skip it. And yeah. He's trying to get online, so.
Oh, he's trying to get online.
Okay, we have a quorum.
Excellent. I have no amendments to the agenda. I'm going to go a little bit out of order here for presentations. Mr. Funkhauser, how was your trip?
Fantastic.
You feel refreshed?
After 12 days, yes.
Like 12 days of Christmas, right?
7 days being completely disconnected from the world is great.
You know, staff said they were much more efficient with their work.
I'm
here,
sure
too.
They were.
So, just so you know. Excellent. Well, thank you for that impromptu presentation there. We have no public hearings. Is that correct? Next, we have citizen comments on items on the agenda. This is an opportunity for anyone to comment on an item on the agenda. Is anyone here? Want to speak towards an item on the agenda? Okay. Next, we have consent agenda. We have the minutes from the July 25th and August 8th meetings, and we have bills for $2,293,641.88. We have a water report for April through June of 23, and we have 2023-69 well number 7 rehab change order number 1. This is actually a complete and final, and we saved approximately $20,000. Is there a motion and a second?
So moved.
Second.
Terulis and Soling, I heard. Roll call when you get a moment.
Plocher?
Yes.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Terulis?
Aye.
Transier?
Aye.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Yes.
Cornels?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Hey, Ken, are you here yet? Ken Koch? Have you connected?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so Ken is present, and was that your vote? Was that your vote?
No.
No? So are you voting yes or no on the consent agenda?
Yes.
Thank you, Ken.
Motion carries.
Well, Abbott Costello there. Okay, next, we have the mayor's report. We have a few items here. The first, I'll ask for a motion, and then we'll get into the discussion. Motion for 2023-51, an ordinance authorizing the Fifth Amendment to the annual budget for the year beginning May 1st, 22, and ending April 30th, 23. This, Rob, where are you at? This is because something happened last fiscal year, correct?
Correct. The library went over budget due to the flooding that occurred there on December 23rd.
Okay, so if we get a motion second, he'll answer any questions.
So, second.
Second by Transier. And Rob, so there was flooding, they had to pay out some money, but they also got reimbursed, correct?
They did. They paid about $57,000, got about $56,000 back in insurance proceeds, but because of that, they did go over on the expenditure side to avoid all that comment. We need to come in the budget.
Okay, any questions? This will require 2/3, I believe,
yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
So that's 6. Okay, roll call, please.
Coke?
Yes.
Plocher?
Yes.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Terulis?
Aye.
Transier?
Aye.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Yes.
Cornels?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you all very much. Next, I'm looking for a motion and a second to approve a resolution for an updated pension funding policy. Anyone?
So moved.
Okay, Funkhauser and Transier. Rob, I'll turn it over to you again, please.
Well, the original pension funding policy was passed in 2015. This is just a amendment to the salary function that we use each year when we come up with the actuarial determined contribution rate. Previously, we used a flat 5%, but based on the recommendation of the city's actuaries in conjunction with the experience studies that the state has been conducting with various pension funds across the state, they recommend that we use more of a sliding scale, which starts at 11% and then kind of levels off to more of an inflationary increase as the officers move on in their career, which is pretty reflective of how police salaries work throughout the state. Typically in the first 5 or 6 years, you see some pretty significant increases before leveling off after the 6 years, more of an inflationary increase. Yorkville is a prime example of that. You can see the salary schedules, how they were included in the packaging.
Questions or comments? We need to vote on this one too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Roll call.
Funkhauser?
Sorry.
Aye.
Turoulis?
Aye.
Transier?
Yes.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Yes.
Cornels?
Aye.
Koch?
Yes.
Plocher?
Yes. Yes.
Motion carries.
Ken, you're trying to vote twice now. We're all here, though.
Kind of intimidating yelling at us.
That's not me this time. Okay, under Mayor's Report, item not listed, I want you all to know I am always promoting Yorkville and our festivals, which Tim will talk about later in the meeting. We were out of town for the weekend, family, myself, in Wisconsin, wore my Yorkville shirts, and ran into an individual who... lives in Morris, and he was up in Two Rivers, that's the town we're in, about 30 miles south of Green Bay. He was up there for his class reunion. We started chit-chatting. Turns out he's similar age to myself, a couple years older. And I said, well, do you like 80s and 90s music? He says, I do, and my wife loves it. I said, well, you need to come to Hometown Days. We got a great cover band for a for Sunday night at Hometown Days. So he may come. And then I ran into another guy and his wife, a gentleman who was wearing a shirt. What is that band I was telling you about, Tim? American English. I said, oh, where are you from? He said, Chicago. I said, was that the band? He said, yes. I said, they do a great job. He says, oh, yeah, we love them. I said, well, they're going to be playing our Hometown Days Festival, and they live in one of the suburbs, Chicago or near suburb. They're going to be playing in Yorkville on Labor Day weekend, and they start at 11 or 12 on that Sunday as well, correct?
11 a.m. Sunday.
Yeah, so Tim will talk more about Hometown Days, but I want you to know I'm always promoting, and I'm hoping they come and spend a little bit of their time and money in our town. So I'm always doing my job. Whether you agree with me or not, I'm always doing it. Okay. Next, Public Works.
Wait, Mayor's Report.
Oh, Mayor's Report. Oh, my God. I'm skipping the most important part, the website redesign. Bart, you had a comment on that?
Yeah, the website redesign is in the packet. If anybody has any objections or changes, now would be an appropriate time to speak them. The website is set to go live in mid-September, pending review at this meeting.
Questions or comments? Thank you very much. Okay, now we'll go to Public Works. Who's going to do Public Works? You are? Craig's going to do it? Perfect. Thank you, Craig.
Make motion for PW 2023-58. Well, number 7, standby generator design.
Is a motion?
Is
there a second?
Second.
Who wants to talk about this? Eric? Brad?
Yeah, this is a key component of our Southside water distribution system going forward, especially for Lake Michigan. It will help us move water from south to north. We can already move water north to south through the 89 treatment facility generator up Grand Reserve, and we'll kind of finish that off. I believe this is part of our WIFIA funding. It's coming in at almost $3 million between design and construction.
Questions, comments?
At the committee meeting, we did address that this will transfer over with the new Lake Michigan Water Project as well.
Excellent. Thank you. Anything else? Roll call.
Tarullos.
Aye.
Transier.
Aye.
Soling.
Aye.
Merrick.
Yeah.
Cornels.
Aye.
Koch.
Yes.
Plocher.
Yes.
Funkhauser.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Item number two, make a motion for PW 2023-70, ordinance amending the Yorkville City Code, Title 7, Chapter 5, Section 7-5-3A, water connection.
Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Transier. Thank you. Bart, you want to take this one, please?
Sure. So we do have our proposal in the packet to increase our water connection fees over a five-year period. In general, for both residential and commercial, we're going to keep the existing tiered structure. For residential, it's based on the unit type. For commercial, it's based on the water connection pipe size. And we're going to increase it, or the proposal is to increase it $1,000 per year for 5 years in a row. So in general,
from existing fees, correct?
Correct, from the existing fees. So a single-family household in Yorkville without a FELOC for a building permit will pay currently about $5,500 for a water connection fee. We would propose to take it to $6,500 on May of 2024, $7,500 on May of 2025, and so on. The condo connection fees are on the lower end, $1,500, $1,600, $1,700, somewhere in there. And we're proposing to do the same $1,000 increases for 5 years in a row. Same for the commercial connection fees. And just of note, once you get past a 6-inch or past a 4-inch water connection, that is market rate. So we have to special order those water meters, basically, connection fittings, and then we price out whatever that connection fee is at that point. So that one is still a TBD within the code as it is currently, but everything else we're proposing to increase in the same manner. Prior to the meeting, Alderman Funkhauser did send us an email asking us for some additional information. Did get a chance to send it out at about 6 p.m. Told him I'd verbally narrate it here too. In general, we surveyed some of the immediately surrounding towns as part of the connection fee presentation that we did a couple months ago at Public Works Committee. It's Oswego, Montgomery, Sugar Grove. It is in the packet. They are all over the board, generally from $1,500, depending on the unit and the town, up to, I think the highest one was in the $5,600 range or thereabouts. So that was the only comparison that we did. It is in the packet for everybody to take a look. We did additionally communicate with all of our existing home builders and developers, just encouraging them to read the proposal, you know, either give their comments in writing or in person or come to the meeting and speak their piece. And to date, we've only had questions really about prepayments, which we have answered that we do allow prepayments on water connection fees going forward. And you'll have to, I think I'm forgetting one more question in there. Oh, the analysis of how it goes to the, the analysis of potential downturn in housing starts as a result of this. We have not done any formal analysis. We have changed our water connection fees several times throughout the past 20 years or so. And it's difficult to say within our own town how much of an impact that's had, either positive or negatively, or just changed our housing counts. In general, most of the developers that are active in building and have imminent plans to do so in the past had prepaid their water connection fees. I would anticipate that to some degree again. Off the top of my head, my recollection was it was definitely a minority of the overall building permits were prepaid around those times. Maybe 10 or 20% of our total permits would have been prepaid. And generally, those would have been for somebody that was getting ready to pull a building permit within the next year or so. The one conversation I could recall from 15 years ago or so was with Rich Garrard with Wyndham Deer Point at the time. He was working on Caledonia. And they basically said the amount of money they would have to outlay to lock in those lower fees, especially for a larger subdivision, probably wouldn't be worth it just given the uncertainty of the market long term. And so, again, if they were looking to develop immediately, they might prepay some of those, but otherwise they would just pay for them when they came in. So no further analysis has been done. I'm not aware of any other professional or academic studies that have looked at that specifically. Not to say that they don't exist, I just am not aware of them. So that was my full report.
Questions, comments? Roll call, please.
Transier?
Yes.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Yes.
Cornels?
Aye.
Koch?
Yes.
Plocher?
Yes.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Tarulis?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you all for your support. Appreciate it. And I know the residents appreciate it too. Okay, continue.
Item number three, motion to approve PW 2023-71 tandem axle dump truck purchase.
Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Transier. Eric?
Again, we're gonna try to order another truck and hope for the best. We're going to try our third brand of truck in three trucks. This is going to be a Western Star. And we got the idea from the Kendall County Highway Department. They have ordered three of them so far. They are in possession of two and awaiting the third one. And Mr. Transier, I know that your question is going to be price increases. So I asked the county engineer point blank, and he said one was a demo, so there was no price increase. They happened to get that one. One had a price increase, and so far this last one has not. So hopefully things are straightening out a little bit, and we'll be able to get one without a price increase. But he did say that the salesman said there are no guarantees. It is a long lead time. It is a year for the truck and at least 6 months for the body. So we're looking at probably two snow seasons away. And it is coming in under budget. We have budgeted $350, and we are looking at a price of $290,000.
Questions, comments? Mr. Transier.
I noticed in part of the quote that there's an option if you pay within 30 days, the equipment is not subject to a price increase. Did we try to include that with the chassis as well?
We can, but they buy it from Western Star, so Western Star would have to guarantee that to them. They probably wouldn't be able to afford that price, but I would gladly ask.
Okay. Because I know if they get their money up front, they're usually a little bit more accommodating and not...
They are
implementing price increases.
As the leg of holder money for 2 years.
Yeah, but we're budgeted to pay. We can pay it in full right now, right? We don't have to do installments? Okay.
Yeah, no, I will ask tomorrow.
Other questions? Roll call.
Soling?
Aye.
Merrick?
Yes.
Cornels?
Aye.
Koch?
Yes.
Plocher?
Yes.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Tarulis?
Aye.
Transier?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Anything else? Thank you very much. Economic Development Committee.
No report.
Thank you. Public Safety Committee.
No report.
Admin Committee.
No report.
Park Board. Tim, do you want to talk about Hometown Days?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Actually, two quick updates.
You want to talk about the park, too?
Yeah, it's a 100% park project. I know I put out a report in last week's Admin Weekly, but if you get a chance to stop by, it's pretty incredible how much they've done in 2 weeks, getting sidewalks, park concrete, and sledding hill, and things of that nature. So they're really moving along pretty well over there. It's exciting to see. And then, obviously, Hometown Day starts next Thursday. It's a soft opening with the Senior Service and Barbecue and Burkeville Big Man. And then the events begins Friday at 5 o'clock, right?
Friday night, isn't that where we work with, is it Cross Lutheran?
Yeah, we'll have Christian bands Friday night.
Yeah, and they help with that, don't they? The football game is Friday night as well? Be a big crowd.
It'll be pretty neat. It's pretty neat to see the football and car going on at the same time.
And then there's wristbands for the rides?
Saturday and Sunday from 1 to 5 o'clock, wristband special, $75 for wristband.
It's packed. It's packed. It's awesome. Yeah, and that playground is looking great. Scott, you guys starting a little earlier tomorrow?
We have all
week. Yeah, I mean, for you, that's nothing. You know, you're waking 4 in the morning, and I'm just making my first trip to the John about that time. But so it's looking awesome over there, so thank you, Scott.
Let me strike that from the recording.
Anything else, Tim? Any questions for Tim? And then you just keep rolling right up through Christmas, don't you?
Pretty much it's year round now.
Yeah. Oh, and just so you all know, I put a bug in Bart's ear and Tim's ear. We're less than 3 years from the 250th anniversary of, you know, the Declaration of Independence. And I said to staff, we got to figure out what we can do for our 250th anniversary, do something even bigger and better for the 4th. So we're already thinking about that, and we may even put together a little brainstorming, you know, maybe starting early next year, because I don't want to wait till 1 year out. I want to start right away. So just so you know, we've got some great plans. Okay, let's see, where are we at? Planning and Zoning Commission. Oh, I think that's me too, isn't it?
Okay.
Well, I'll be darned. Okay, I'm looking for a motion to approve 2023-11, the Kendall County petition, 2326, a 1.5 mile review for green organics. So we need to vote on this, right?
Yeah, I don't think there's a motion.
What?
For it.
Green organics. Oh, geez, I wrote the wrong thing down. Sorry. Sorry. God, I'm getting all these different. What's that? Milroy Farms. I apologize. Okay, but we do need to vote on this?
Yes.
Oh, voice. Okay. We still need a motion second, though, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we can't vote. Mr. Funkhauser, are you smirking to make a motion or not?
There was a motion.
Oh, there was? Oh, I didn't hear. Okay. Well, you're late then, that's Mr. Funkhauser. I was blowing the name and ignoring the other important part. Okay, so.
Who seconded?
Merrick.
Okay.
Christy, go ahead, please.
This is a request for a 1.5 mile review, which means this property is not incorporated in Yorkville. It is in unincorporated Kendall County. The site is about 40 acres. It was originally a compost facility that straddled both the county and the city's side. They are no longer proposing to continue the compost facility on the city side, but they are looking for an extension of their special use on the county side. So the request would be for the special use to extend out to December of 2033, and the county has incorporated some of staff's comments regarding buffering of landscaping and mitigating any vectors of smell from the site. So staff is supportive of the request.
Questions, comments? Let's do a roll call anyway.
Merrick?
Yes.
Cornelius?
Aye.
Koch?
Yes.
Flocher?
Yeah.
Funkhauser?
Aye.
Tarulis?
Aye.
Transier?
Aye.
Soling?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much. Anything else, Christy?
No.
Excellent. Thank you. City Council report. No report. Thank you. City clerk report?
No report.
Community and liaison reports. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
We're able to get in questions for the meeting, though. Okay, thank you. Staff report?
No reports.
Mayor's report continued. Oh, Bart's going to give a brief budget analysis of this building, and just to summarize, we're in it for about $10.6 million, and in March of 22, so about a year and a half ago, our estimate at that time was $10.58 million. But Bart has a couple things he wants to discuss.
So there is this sheet in the City Council packet, which is generally the same format of a budget analysis that we last reviewed in September of 22, and then March of 22 when we were looking to do the bids for furniture and then pre-construction at the time. And so what we've tried to do is keep an apples-to-apples comparison through the entire project as to what we've kind of communicated the upper end cost to be, you know, through time. And so, you know, there are definitely things when we started the project, you know, even when we had hired the architect, that we did not estimate, and so those are generally exempt from this calculation here, but we did make a, you know, an assumption here. If you're just looking at the original projections, like, this column will not add up to $10.4 million in general, but we think that that's an accurate representation of probably the overall cost that we communicated at the time. So we can see in March of 22, when we were talking about this, we expected to come in right at $10.58 million, all in land acquisition, construction costs, etc., and we've calculated that at $10.586. So that $10.586 does include about $100,000 of indoor and outdoor improvements to the building that were probably covered by departmental budgets that were, may or may not be something that we would have done whether we were in this building or the old building. So conservatively, we just threw them all and didn't attempt to do any of that analysis into that estimate. So if you back those out, we would probably be 10.5, maybe a little bit under, so right in line with what we'd even communicated in September of 22. So of note, since the last time we've talked about this in general, our change orders we think are done. We are done with the punch list on the building. We anticipate getting closeout documents soon. We still do not have an exact delivery date for the AV equipment in this room yet, but the time frame is not switched from Q3 of this year. So hopefully here in several weeks, we'll get everything up and running, and then we'll be able to formally close out the project at that time. So, but with all that being said, I also included another analysis after this of just additional things that aren't included within the prior year's budget analysis. So things like the exterior sign, we punted on that early on in the process. It still says HR Green on some of it, so we have to get proposals to redo those. That required some understanding of our HOA and whether there was a board, whether there were financial obligations amongst all the lots. We don't believe there's an HOA board. We don't believe that we have to form one. We think that we have majority votes within the subdivision, but we still have to verify that. And we do think that there's an ability, if we ever decide, basically to form an HOA board and giving the other landowners representation on that board, that they would actually be responsible for some of the things that we've done with basin maintenance, sign construction, and roadway improvements if we ever should go there. But this is our attempt to kind of catalog everything else that's left on the project that may come up either for a city council vote or just be part of a budget discussion in the future. So in general, the exterior monument signage, we should have a presentation for everybody here in the next month or two, probably to do that work next year. We have talked to Children of America. They do want to remain on the sign. They'll probably update their panels, so there should be some cost sharing there. We do have a proposal from a Conservation Foundation-backed contractor to do full landscaping of the property for about $24,000, so that might be able to be done, at least signed off on administratively, depending on the budget. We do intend, though, to basically bring that presentation to a committee, city council, have you guys vote on it, just so in general you have an understanding of what's going to actually go on the property, and then we can pick and choose plans from there. And then everything else is kind of little things. We've got monitor stands for the dais that need to be ordered. We've got furniture pieces that we found. We just need extra pieces of furniture here and there. And then the rear stairwell in the back of the building here has physical key access but no key card access, which is a little bit of a problem. So there will be it'll probably be a new project authorization for that. Probably won't run that through as a change order. And that's reflected on here too. Of note, since the last time this was published, we did have the bridge path from the parking lot to the baseball fields here, something that was talked about conceptually in the past. We think an upper end estimate to be ADA compliant and everything for a span bridge is probably $30,000 or $40,000 on the high end. We think we might be able to do it cheaper than that, and we'll vet some options and bring those forward. But that would allow the public to park in the parking lot here and then walk across the basin directly to the ball fields without having to go around the block, basically. So that's everything. If anybody had any questions about any of these things, I'd be happy to take them now. But this will probably be the last budget analysis, short of something going really wrong, for the Prairie Point project.
Questions, comments? No, thank you, Bart. And since you're doing such a good job with budget analysis and presentations, why don't you go to the next one? And I'm going to step aside for this one because this one's longer.
It is. Yeah, I'm going to be trying to share it to the screen here. There we go. Okay, so we have sent out our WIFIA letter of interest, which is basically a pre-application process for our $100 million or so WIFIA loan at the Lake Michigan project. And so as part of that, it required some financial projections in detailed exhibits to be submitted to the EPA, which are public documents, that contain some new information for us that I wanted to just share so everybody has a current understanding of what is probably the first project pro forma, first water revenue projections, not necessarily water rates, but projections of total revenue, and just some other project financial information, just so you understand where we're at currently and where this is going to go over the next several months. So again, we've submitted the LOI. We expect that the EPA is going to get back to us in about 8 weeks, and then that's going to give us an idea of when we're going to apply, when we might close. If our estimates and projections are without objection from the EPA, that they're generally correct, and then they'll invite us to apply for the WIFIA loan after that. So again, in general, if everything goes okay, we would anticipate that the earliest possible disbursement of loan proceeds to us would be sometime middle of 2024, or at least that's when we'd be approved to close on the loan. So before we get into this, all this is a projection. So these are our best guess as of August of 2023. We have many things that can change. We're still very early on in the project that are going to be brought to us by our regional partners, DWC or other towns, different engineering firms, multiple entities. And so these things are going to be refined over time that will result in some point to an actual proposal for water rates and bonds and all these other things. But this is just illustration at this point. So, and again, this is a worst case scenario, and I'm gonna get into the underlying assumptions as to why it's a worst case scenario, such that we might be able to manage things throughout the project and then bring those costs more in line with what we're projecting. Okay, so if you think about all the things I'm about to say, think about them in the context of these are the assumptions that's going to be used to project annual water rates, the entire project pro forma, and then an estimate of residential water rates at the end of the presentation. So without giving away that ending, I'm gonna walk you through each page to kind of tell you what these variables are. So first, in this page, okay, this is just assumptions. We assume any water rate increase shown in aggregate in the budget is effective May 1st of each fiscal year. So if we do any staggered proposals, that will change our analysis over time. Okay. Two, we have a change in accounts listed up here. So in general, they are conservatively estimating us to grow between 150 and 200 homes per year each year going forward. So during the Great Recession and afterwards, we might have only done 40 or 50 homes per year. Some of the years, our record is 2006, we did 997 new housing starts in a year. So those are gonna be all over the board depending on the larger housing market, et cetera. The more people that come to town, the more homes that get built, theoretically, the project cost should be split wider, and so it should make it more affordable for everybody. Another page shows revenue side of the budget. Okay, so this is going to be condensed and summarized in a future page. So of note, this assumption on number two here, so this row, row one, assumed water rate increase, is the annual total revenue increase needed for water sales each year. So 8% in 25, 10%, 11%, 12.5. 12.5 is across the board in this scenario. Out of all the scenarios that we've projected so far, this one is the most conservative, and we'll get into it later, but it assumes that we are deferring principal payments for 5 years, so we're not making WIFIA payment on a $100 million loan until probably 2034, that we're capitalizing interest, which is basically deferring interest payments for an additional 5 years, so also not making even any interest payments on a $100 million WIFIA loan until 2033, that we are not going to get an IEPA state revolving loan fund, and instead of a 2% loan, you know, it'll probably be a 4% private loan, and some other things along the way as I get there. So this is the probably worst case scenario with it, and we'll get into how this looks elsewhere. So another assumption, item three here, our water connection fees, $230,000 or so annually over each year, is way lower than what we saw just a fiscal year ago at $595,000. It doesn't really take into account the water rate or the water connection fee increases that were just approved in tonight's meeting. So as we talked about in the Public Works Committee, these revenues may or may not increase as a result of our policy decision tonight, based on growth, based on developers' ability to prepay, and just other factors. So, but they have conservatively estimated that at $230,000. We took a 20-year retrospective of connection fees prior to this meeting. I think the highest year was 2003 or 2004, and it was like $1.5 million in water connection fees. That's when we were building several hundred homes per year, and they were paying full water connection fees at that point. So, you know, if we have a subdivision like Bristol Bay, which all of a sudden decides to build a few hundred homes in a year, and they're paying their current water connection fees, and then they increase over time, it is not out of line that you would see our annual water connection fees to go from $230,000 to $1 million, maybe for a year or two. But they're going to be volatile, and we just chose to kind of scale that back. So that is one possible variable there. Okay, let me make sure I've got my notes here. Yep, okay. All right, another page. This is going to be the expenditure side of the budget. So, and again, hard to read, I know, but there's a lot of figures, and the important things are they assume that there's an escalation factor in this pro forma. So, you know, the same way that we budget, we assume increases in commodities and other things across the board. You know, they're assuming 3%, 5%, 6%, et cetera, over like a 40-year period. There's a couple different line items for treatment facility supplies, repair and maintenance, etc. This budget assumes that we continue to run our wells and water treatment plants in perpetuity. No cost savings from mothballing them or decommissioning them or using them less. We just carried that forward. At some point or another, we would anticipate that there'd be an operational recommendation coupled with, you know, an exact Lake Michigan turn-on date, et cetera, that we would say, okay, we're going to do X, Y, and Z to the wells and water treatment plants. That's going to save us hopefully a little bit of money each year. But for now, we've just projected that forward conservatively. Four, there's a line item here for Lake Michigan purchase water. Just as a reminder, we are not pumping this water out of the ground anymore and getting it for free, plus whatever the operational costs are. We're going to be basically a wholesale purchaser of water. And so there's going to be an expenditure line item. So again, the theory is that whatever we come to an agreement with DuPage Water Commission, who comes to an agreement with the city of Chicago to get water, we're going to have to charge above and beyond that in order to pay for our operations, maintenance of our system, and then all of our capital programs. So just as a reminder there. Okay. Next page is just further down the expenditure side of the budget. So this is going to deal with capital outlay, some debt service, etc. So of note, as I mentioned previously, you've got number two here. You've got a WIFIA loan. You've got an IEPA SRF. Again, in this scenario, we don't assume any IEPA SRF fund, it's all going to be basically private bonding. And then there's also no WIFIA payments due within this 10-year projection, which is what WIFIA staff require as part of this exhibit. So I have a detailed pro forma that's 40 years out that'll explain that, explain what happens in 2034 and beyond later, but for this sheet, it's not on there. And then four, you've got excess fund balance used for cash funding. So there are some assumptions made here by our sub-consultants that filled this out, basically saying at some point or another, we're going to make a judgment based on the amount of cash that we have in our fund balance in the water fund and elsewhere and use of bond proceeds and actually make cash payments to defer our cost of the project. So, but those can change, and obviously they're going to be not split-second decisions, but we're going to need to take a snapshot at the time that we make that decision, probably a year from now, 2 years from now, and make that now. So whatever changes from that will also impact our underlying assumptions. Okay, now we get into the capital side. So this should look somewhat familiar. This is our Lake Michigan project costs. It should line up exactly with timing, cost estimates, as we had reviewed at the Public Works Committee in June of 2023, and then the City Council during the fiscal year 24 budget process. So this should all be encompassed in the financial pro forma, as you've already seen it. Another page talks about the approximate funding source to be used each year. So this is, if everything goes as we plan, this will show that we plan to use $40 million in WIFIA funds to fund construction in 2026, $30 million in 2027, and so on. And you know where these revenue bonds come from. So again, just a summary of how we're going to be using these things over time. We've got page 9 that is going to show Lake Michigan water supply project costs, but with a breakdown as to which funding source is used. So for certain items, like the transmission main, we're going to want to use as much WIFIA funding as possible because that's a relatively simple thing to process administratively versus something that may require us to do additional studies or land acquisitions that are required by the federal government when you use WIFIA funds. So we've strategically selected these for ease of use for our staff and then for the community's projects costs. So that was all Lake Michigan. So this is the other half of our capital improvement project. This is all of our internal improvements. The Well 10 that we're doing right now, the Well 7 standby generator, which we just voted on the design engineering, etc., and kind of where each one of those projects is going to be funded, either with WIFIA, revenue bonds, part of the budget itself, etc. Okay, now we get onto the pro forma, which is where we start to get into the interesting information. So this is the top half of one page of four pages that show 40 years of project pro forma. So, and they are consolidated categories from things I've already talked about and things that are going to be in this present, things that were are going to be in the PDF that I will send everybody after the meeting. So first, I wanted to just point out that they've run two water rate adjustments that we'll get into here in a few minutes, two scenarios for this capitalized interest and deferred principal scenario that they've drafted up. So the numbers in row six, smooth, match what we saw on that first page. When you flip over to the next couple pages, you'll see what the ongoing 40-year projections are for aggregate water rate increases are. Again, that is not a strict water rate increase. It could come from volume, so amount used. It could come from growth of new houses, so more people using water, or it could come from water rate increases. So, but they just said you've got $5 million this year, you've got a $6 million bond payment, so you have to come up with $1 million, and so that's 20% or whatever. So that's what that number is. So rather than smooth it out, they've given a scenario where they've said, here's the longest you could wait if you wanted to just do zeros or a very minimal increase for as long as possible, and then only spike an increase in the year when, like, you have your first WIFIA payment. And so for this scenario, you know, you've got zeros all the way out to fiscal year 27, but then you've got a 22%, a 10%, a 6%, 1-1, and then you got a 93% way out in fiscal year 33 or 32. So the policy decision we're going to have to make at some point, and really why I'm trying to, you know, give this information to you now, is how soon do you want to start ramping up those increases? Is it better to get over the hump now and have lower increases later? Is it better to defer as much as you can now and have higher increases later because you might have more people that are paying for the project? And so that's what you're going to have to think through. Okay, so then further on this page, there, if you look at one of the rows, and it is too difficult to do the excerpt here, it does show your WIFIA debt service payments. So we've got our first schedule, we've imported it in here. So again, under this scenario where you're deferring principal and interest until fiscal year 33 or fiscal year 44, your first payment in fiscal year 33 is interest only, and it's $5.2 million. Okay? Then that ramps up the next year in fiscal year 33 when you make your first principal payment, and that's $7 million. And in general, the WIFIA debt service schedule from about fiscal year 34 until fiscal year 60 ends up being about $7.5 million. We also have some early debt service schedules that add in all of our existing debts, the WIFIA, the revenue bonds, IEPA, and in general, we think that the annual debt service for the city from this project plus others is going to be like just under $10 million according to this scenario. So again, we hope it won't come to that, but that's what they're projecting as far as this goes. And so those underlying assumptions for those debt service schedules, again, this is a private revenue bond. We anticipate that whatever we issue in the future is going to be 4% and 30-year term. If we do get an IEPA, State Revolving Loan Fund, that will be at a 2% or maybe a little bit higher than that, so some pretty significant savings. And so this is the projection of when we think we're going to need those private bonds, a little bit in fiscal year 25, a little bit in fiscal year 26, 27, and 28. Then on the next page, it'll show your WIFIA borrowing projections. And we talked about this a little bit before. It is a 35-year term. We anticipate that the interest rate is going to be 3.75% and that we're going to need $40 million or so in fiscal year 25 to fund construction, 30 in 26 and 27 each, and then $3 or $4 million in fiscal year 28 if all goes to plan. Okay, so here's what everybody should be waiting for. This is our residential bill projections for an average single family house currently. So this is a bi-monthly chart here. We make no assumptions on the water infrastructure fee or the base charge or the volumetric charge. We basically just made some broad assumptions going forward. And so, you know, in fiscal year 23, we've got an estimate of $94 a month, basically for a household, or $94 billing cycle, so $47 a month. Going up to, you know, $146 in fiscal year 28, a couple hundred bucks in fiscal year 35, up to $300 or $400 in fiscal year 60. So of note, this is the worst case scenario, again, out of all the scenarios we've shown. $474 bi-monthly. In 2060, in present dollars, is worth about $191. So basically a little bit more than double what our existing rates are for $100+ million WIFIA project. So, and I've got some different charts because we have communicated estimates over time. So in 2016 or 2017, when we completed our water comprehensive water system study, and did our first sharing study with Oswego and Montgomery, we had projected a 2030 water rate, or water bill, rather, monthly of about $93. So at the time, we were right around $45, and we said, we think by 2030, you know, the water bill is going to roughly double to $93 a month from $45. And so this scenario that we are showing here again, which is a worst case scenario, is actually cheaper than what we communicated years ago. So this chart and the prior chart are slightly misaligned in that if you just take this $88.49 monthly, multiply it by two, and then cross-reference that against fiscal year 30 here, they're slightly off because this was produced about a week ago, this was produced today. So we had our sub-consultant send it over, and so they've made some refinements and it's moved the needle a couple dollars, basically, you know, 7 years into the future. So Of note, some of the other options that we're going to have with the pro forma on this is to not capitalize the interest. So basically make those interest payments, you know, probably a year or two from now when we get a WIFI loan over time. So yes, because you're not deferring your interest payments, you're going to pay more in the near future, but eventually this curve is going to reverse and then it'll be cheaper to not capitalize the interest over time. So our financial analyst has projected that the difference between capitalizing the interest and not capitalizing the interest is worth about $30 million in interest over a 40-year period. So if we capitalize the interest, meaning we're not making those interest payments at the beginning, we're going to spend $30 million more than if we just bite the bullet and start making those payments sooner than later. And so here's kind of what that looks like. And so this is what we're going to have to talk about, is how does this rate increase graph or revenue increase graph look over time? So the blue in this scenario is smoothing it with capitalized interest, and the orange would be smoothing it with no capitalized interest. So again, you're paying more at the start of the project, but then you pay less towards the end, and then it, you know, is kind of relatively level once you get past making your WIFIA payments. And then the last minute rates that we talked about, you know, this is just percentage increases from year to year. You know, this is what it looks like if you choose to delay until you absolutely have to. So again, here's that 90% scenario that we talked about. And if you capitalize the interest, it actually makes it a little bit worse before it falls down to earth. So, and then just looking at this a different way. So these are the two options to smooth the rate with capitalized interest versus non-capitalized interest. So again, if you defer those interest payments into the future, you pay less in the beginning, more over the middle, and then more ultimately at the end, versus making those payments earlier, you pay more at the beginning, less in the middle, less at the end. And so that's just a different way to look at it. So that is the, again, this is the first time we've produced this. It is very high levels. Of note, so just wanted to circle back to this residential water bill estimate. So this is a required chart in a WIFI application, so it is not a proposal. The WIFI application actually requires us to go out to fiscal year 33, so 10 years from now. So everything else beyond fiscal year 33 is not required by the EPA, but we were interested in seeing what that number was, and so we had our consultants produce it. So we hope these figures are not going to come to fruition through a combination of intergovernmental agreement negotiations with Oswego and Montgomery, because we still have to decide exactly what percentage of the project we're paying. And we think, conservatively, we've assumed that we're going to pay for a very high amount, and hopefully we'll negotiate that down when we talk about route studies and ultimate share of the project. Competitive bidding. So we still have to go through and, you know, bid out the project with DWC, find all the largest contractors, and, you know, come up with unique ways basically to save money there. Value engineering, so we have engineers on staff. Oswego has an engineer on staff. DuPage Water Commission has their own staff engineers. They've hired consultants, and so between this team of engineers, employees, interested citizens, we hope to be able to come up with ways through route design, et cetera, to be able to reduce costs overall. But for now, we're just taking the highest dollar amount that we can think of that's reasonable as part of this WIFI application and running these analyses after. And then just other cost-saving items. So, and again, finally, I just want to reiterate, like on this, this is the most extreme scenario that we're showing in WIFIA because we're basically not making a payment on a $100 million loan until fiscal year 33 or 34. So if we start paying those things earlier, yes, your water rate increases are going to have to be sooner and higher than they would otherwise be, but over the long term, you end up saving money. So just for this analysis, though, we've shown it as the most conservative scenario. And I think that was it. So yeah, just reminder, the bill projections are not a proposal. So they're illustrations only, and we'll see what happens. And that's it. So if anybody has any questions, happy to take them, you know, now or after the meeting. So.
Well done.
Questions? Comments? Okay. Thank you very much. All right, do we have anything else under billing updates? Nope. Or water study update?
Excellent.
Okay. I feel like there's something else ahead, but I don't have it written down, so nothing there. Okay, I have no additional business. Are there any citizen comments for tonight?
Hi, my name is Molly Kresge. I just want to open by saying that I realize that the Unified Development Ordinance Advisory Committee has put a ton of work into the proposed changes for zoning and ordinances, and I appreciate your time and efforts. I've been to a few of the meetings. One of them lasted 3.5 hours. I feel like most of you guys are genuinely trying with good hearts to do right by the people of Brookville. And I'm just going to discuss a few things that I disagree with about the overall approach to lawmaking in Yorkville. But please understand that I'm not against you. I couldn't do what you're doing. I appreciate the time and energy that you've expended on this process. And I also realize that our existing ordinances and the newly proposed changes are common, but that doesn't necessarily make them right. The truth is pretty uncommon these days. I have a duty to the people to say what I'm about to say, and I just ask that you please try to receive this message while keeping all of this in mind. During a 2019 TED Talk, human rights activist Yunomi Park explained how North Korea went from being a free country to a totalitarian regime in just 3 generations. She escaped North Korea when she was 13 years old, and now, as a tiny, soft-spoken, kind-hearted young woman, speaks all over America, giving heartfelt warnings about the need to stand for human rights. In this particular talk, she focused heavily on the way that changes in language are used to intentionally bring about changes in thought. In Korea, she explains, the word love has only one meaning, loyalty to the dear leader or the mother party. There's no word for romantic or brotherly love. If you don't know the words, she warns, you don't understand the concept. Therefore, you don't even realize the concept is a possibility. She goes on to explain that North Korea has eliminated the word I, so they don't even have the capacity to understand what individual means. They always use we. Yunomi confesses that everything must be taught, including compassion. As a child in North Korea, she saw people dying and dead on the streets and felt nothing. Not because she was a psychopath, but because she never learned the concept of compassion. Only after learning the words and concepts, compassion, empathy, and sympathy, can she now feel them. If you've never learned to think critically, you simply see what you're told to see, speak what you're told to speak, and think what you're told to think. If your emotions are limited to the emotions to which you have been exposed. This talk reminded me of the ongoing debate among members of the Unified Development Ordinance Advisory Committee about the use of the term single family home versus single unit home. I understand that the suggested change from single family to single unit results on its surface from a desire to implement more equitable language by defining dwellings by form rather than function. However, if we insist upon removing relationship terms from our language, at some point a generation will arise without knowledge that loving and supporting families facilitate the continuation of mankind. If we want to build strong, self-sustaining communities, we really should honor and support the family, the very structure from which that stability is derived. Who benefits when we prioritize equitable language that discusses form over the structure, form of a structure over the life-giving language that describes the inhabitants of that structure, especially when the structure houses the precious building block for the continuation of human civilization? I'll give you an example. If a road needed to be widened and 12 houses had to be removed in order for the project to go forward, it would be a lot easier for the government to justify tearing down 12 single unit homes than it would be to justify uprooting and relocating 12 single family homes. Language matters because people matter, and the lives that they build matter. Relationships between mothers, fathers, sons, siblings, grandmothers, they matter. Units don't. the term unit is in reality not equitable at all. It's simply a word choice that is derived from an animosity toward humanity. And I'm not saying that you have chosen it or are proposing to choose it for this reason, but someone somewhere along the hierarchy has. A family is a group of two or more persons related by birth, marriage, or adoption. Contractors build single-family homes with family lifestyles in mind. The form of the home is determined by the way family life functions. It's possible for unrelated parties to live in a home that was designed for a family. However, it's far less common, and even when the home remains a single-family home, even when occupied by unrelated parties. Calling these homes units won't clarify anything, but it will change the way we communicate and subsequently think about the relationships fostered in these homes. Do you remember Newspeak from George Orwell's novel 1984? It was published in 1949. It's not a fairy tale, it's a warning. In this dystopian novel, Newspeak is the fictional language of Oceania, a totalitarian superstate. Wikipedia summarizes, to meet the ideological requirements of socialism in Oceania, the party created Newspeak, which is a controlled language of simplified grammar and restricted vocabulary designed to limit the individual person's ability to think critically or to articulate subversive concepts, such as personal identity, self-expression, and free will. In Oceania, such thoughts are thought crimes that contradict the orthodoxy. I know you are being pressured to incorporate Newspeak into our ordinances. I know that the lawyers and scholars appear to be making a decent argument that equity should be held in higher regard than the families that gave birth to us, but you are being lied to. The motives for the changes are clear, even if the lawyers and scholars don't realize it. The signs are everywhere for those willing to hear the warnings from people like Yanomi, who have the perspective of having escaped the things that we are currently being lured into. In America, government exists solely to protect the rights of we the people. Governments should really be rooting for the continuation of mankind. They should really be elevating and honoring the family and using legislation to facilitate procreation. We love to feel that we're doing our part to protect the planet, and we certainly love to protect the animals. Yet we insist upon killing our babies in our wombs, promoting relationships that cannot lead to the production of a future generation, and legislating ourselves out of existence. Is mankind suicidal? Or is there a murderous top-down agenda being pushed that benefits from legislating the death of the family? All we have to do is say no to Newspeak. But we have to do it before the oppressive, totalitarian powers that are opposed to the continuation of free people, like the ones who have overtaken North Korea in three generations, take away our words. Because after the words are gone, the thoughts will soon be gone. And we won't have the vocabulary or the conceptual understanding to articulate the need for family to be respected and protected. This reprogramming happens faster than you can imagine. Lately, we're seeing a push to inaccurately label our constitutional republic as a democracy. This push is purposeful. Democracies are ruled by the emotions of an impassioned mob. Republics are ruled by reason. And constitutional republics are ruled by reasonable, intentional men who understand that it is their honor and duty to protect God-given individual liberties in spite of the mandates of tyrants or the screeching of the mob. If the powers that be can convince Americans that majority rules, all they have to do is incite the mob for our Constitution to be ignored. And that's exactly what they have been fairly successful in doing over the last few years. So I will spend my days echoing the warnings of people like Yanomi, so that you might come to understand the danger of removing life-giving relationship language from our ordinances, and instead focus your energy on removing, in their entirety, ordinances that violate the inalienable rights of the people, as documented by our state and federal constitutions, which each of you took an oath to uphold before taking your seats. It's crucial that government officials take their oaths seriously. It's crucial that they read and study the documents they have sworn to uphold. Our future depends upon all of us knowing, implementing, and upholding the truths contained in these documents. clinging to the truths of our founding documents will be the only thing that keeps us from opening ourselves to tyranny. Men of every color and creed are corrupted by power, but we don't have to succumb to this corruption. Our divinely inspired founding documents contain the power to set us free, should we choose to rely upon them once again. The future of our nation will be determined by the way that we respond to this call. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else?
Thank you also for what you guys do. I'm Andrea Hodek, and I have a different perspective when I heard about this word change. So in regard to this ordinance of changing single family to single unit, I want to understand why is that important that you are considering that. And as a realtor, I have the honor of serving people as a fiduciary with one of their fundamental basic needs, which is shelter. This opportunity is life-changing, not for not only my clients, but for myself to witness. People work hard and sacrifice to have the means to provide for such an expensive investment. A home is the American dream, and people are still coming from across the seas and borders to have a chance to have their own, where they can thrive with their family, not their unit. Unit is cold and sterile language for something that is so emotional for people. Have you ever cried with someone that saved every cent for 20 years to be able to give their family a dream home? Or witnessed the joy of people who finally got their credit score to a place where they can now qualify for a loan to make that life-changing purchase? There are many examples of the emotions that go with the blood, sweat, and tears of homeownership. A family can be any group of people that are bound by marriage or relationship. There can be biological or adopted children. It can also be a foster family. It can be me living with my grandma and grandpa. It can be a relative and their partner raising the child of a deceased sibling. It's anything that anyone wants it to be. You changing the word doesn't change what it is. It will always be a single family home. In fact, some of these homes are so big, it's possible at times for two families to live together if that's what they want. It's ultimately up to the homeowner who they want under their roof. I just don't see how changing the word from family to unit is going to be a better option, even if it's just amongst yourselves. In this example from the EPA, protect your family from lead in your home. This is a mandatory disclosure provided to buyers of any home built before 1978. Do you know why they use the word family? Because lead is a serious health hazard and will harm people you love and care about if not taken as such. People relate to family. On page one, it doesn't read, simple steps to protect your unit from lead hazards. It says, simple steps to protect your family. That applies to whatever living situation that particular reader has. So the National Association of Realtors is not changing their language, neither is the MLS or the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Because here, they talk about FHA single family housing on their website. So why are we?
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Okay, I have nothing else. There are no needs for executive session tonight. We are now adjourned. Thank you very much.
Motion for
that? Yeah. What's that?
Motion.
Well, if you want a motion, I can adjourn without a motion. Make a motion. Is that a motion?
Move to adjourn.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. There.
Thanks.
We're adjourned.